Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2020. Lecture 1, delivered on January 13th.
Today, Introduction to Finance. Finance is a subdiscipline of economics. There is a myth out there that it is somehow related to accounting. Accounting is a very different field from finance. We use information products from accounting, but we have to fix them because accountants think of things differently from how we do in finance. We're all in the world of business, and I'm going to start with you, madam. What is business? Oh, gee, I'm not doing business in my own company. Let's try this. Sir, what's business? Yes.
I would say the everyday operations of a company.
The everyday operations of a company. Okay. Can you tell me your idea of what business is?
Just all the underlying things about the economy and how it works.
That would include things like the Federal Reserve, which isn't a business. You got an idea?
A person or group of people with an idea trying to profit from it.
Well, there's one way of thinking about it. It's interesting because we are all in business. You are majoring in business, but a consolidated, instantly, this is what business is, comes out all kinds of different ways depending upon whom you ask. Business is the organized conversion of factors of production into an output with the intention of making a profit. Now, let me get back to accounting and finance. I have to make that distinction clear. We use information products from accounting, but we are not interested in the accounting numbers themselves. We have to fix them because accountants think of the world differently from how we do. It is so serious that even the term cost means something different to us in finance from what it does to accountants. Profit is not a particularly interesting term to us in business, in finance. Profit is something they talk about in accounting. They talk about it on the financial news networks. They say, well, this company was profitable last year and all that kind of stuff. Well, we don't give a rat's ass about that. We care about something else that is deeper, that we have to look at the accounting numbers and then put numbers in, take numbers out. Let me give you an idea of this. Madam, are you majoring in finance?
No.
Pity. What are you majoring in?
Marketing.
Yep, marketing. I disrespect other disciplines. I don't mean to. Well, yes, I do. Okay. So marketing's great. I used to teach marketing. You know, it's a wonderful place not to have a job. Try this. You have decided that you graduated. You're there. You are at the graduation. The professors, like me, we're all sitting there in our black robes, just scowling at you. You are so unworthy of this degree. Oh God, there goes another one of my babies. Yeah, that kind of thing. But we've made arrangements. You're going to get a job at State Barn, and you are going to be making $60,000 a year. It's all set up. You leave that ceremony, whee, off into the sunset, and we know you're going to be doing great. You come back a couple of years later, and you show up in my office. Professor C, I just wanted to see you. I stopped by just to talk to some of my favorite professors, the best ones that I had, and you were the only one I could think of. And I wanted to tell you, and I just, oh my God, you got a job at State Barn, and I mean, you probably have already gotten a couple of raises and all that kind of stuff. We're so proud of people, students like you. And you go, no, Professor C, I drove away from that ceremony that day, and I realized I needed to live my dream. You what? Yes, I opened my own donut shop. You what? Yes. I said to the State Barn, I don't want this job. I want to live my own life. make crullers and cake donuts and indeed some of those dainty long johns that are so tasty and delicious. I just got back my first full year's profit and loss statement, and I made a profit of $20,000. I did, on my precious little company. What do you think of me, Professor C? You know what I'm going to say to you? You dumbass. You didn't make $20,000. You lost $40,000. Do you understand that? She gave up a $60,000 a year job to make a profit of $20,000. That is a cost of $40,000. And eventually, Clueville will call you on the phone. Ring, ring, hello. You're an idiot. What? Yes, because you are giving up more money for less money. Profit in accounting is nothing but a cost to us. Profit in accounting is nothing but a cost to us. It's even worse than that, because cost in accounting, by the rules of accounting, must be represented by something that has been spent in terms of cash. There has to be a receipt. And we do not care about history. That's historical. We don't care about what has already happened. We care about what is going to happen. Historical cost is useless to us because it tells about what already occurred. And we can't worry about the past. We have to worry about what's coming, expected future costs. Another part of it is also, it goes back to what happened with you, madam, opportunity cost. The cost of the best foregone alternative. Opportunity costs are what pretty much drives economic decision making. But there is no receipt. Opportunity cost is money that does not come into your pocket. An accountant cannot recognize that. An accountant can recognize only the money that has come out of your pockets. And that means that they miss the vast majority of the cost of this. You, sir, this tuition, that's a direct cost. That's the very least of the cost of this being in here. You're going to be in here for 3 hours approximately every week. You're going to spend about twice that much time studying. So that's a total of about 9 hours a week just for this course. You could have a job. You could be working at a place that pays $15, well, in your case, $8 an hour, living the dream. So you see, as that cost of giving up something goes up, it's going to be more expensive for you to decide to be here. Suppose next week someone calls you on the phone. You've never seen this phone number before. Hello? Yeah. We're from a modeling agency in Chicago. We saw your face on Facebook. You are delicious. We need you to be on a photo shoot in the islands next week. But I got my class. We're paying you $500,000. Well, screw that class. You see, as the cost goes up, the opportunity goes up, cost goes up, you're going to change your economic decision making because you are giving up too much money to be here. That's why we love recessions in academia, because more people go to college during a recession because they can't find a good paying job. But once the economy is booming and those salaries and wages go up, well, then you guys aren't, a lot of people won't be in college anymore. They'll be out there working and making a living and living a good life. This also explains social behavior, sociological behavior. We will see teenagers, especially, gaming day and night and day and night. Why? Because the opportunity cost of their time is so low. They can't get a good paying job, so of course they're going to do things like that. That's why we see people in lower economic, socioeconomic classes committing more crimes, simply because the opportunity cost of their time spent in jail is much lower than it is for a rich person. So we'll see more criminal behavior. We will see the same thing in a line at Disney. You will not see rich people standing in lines for long lines for those rides at Disney because they're not going to stand there. It'll be the people who are middle income, lower middle income, who will do that. What do the rich people do? I was running with that crowd of rich people. We have our own ways to get to the rides, to get to the good places. There are clubs that you can join that cost tens of thousands of dollars, but they get you easy, instant access. Think about this when you go to the store. There are some higher-end stores where the prices are higher than they are at the low-end stores. For example, you can go to a store like Schnucks, which has higher prices than Walmart. But you see, why would people go to a store that has higher prices when they could go to a store that has lower prices? Full disclosure, okay, I'm not disrespecting Walmart. I am a Walmart ho, okay? I'm there literally every day. I mean, where else am I going to find attractive people? Really. But let's talk about this. You see, at Schnucks, there aren't many people because the prices are higher. So I can go right up to the line, and I hardly have to wait at all. But let me tell you about what happens at Walmart. First, you have to find parking, which usually means in another county. Then you have to walk through the parking lot, and you almost get hit by some redneck hillbilly who's got a truck that says, with a bumper sticker that says, "My wife, yes, my dog, maybe, my gun, never." And then you get into the store and you walk in and you say, hear some voice below you say, "Hi, welcome to Walmart." You look at, oh God, it's midget greeters. And then you walk down the hallways and then there's some fat ass person, "Hey, what do you want for dinner?" "Get out of the way, you cow." And then you're going around and you finally get to the line. And the line is a half mile long and the people in front of you are some inattentive parent and a bunch of snot-nosed kids, one sitting there with a finger in his nose staring at you. And the person at the front of the line, some old lady who's never used a debit card before, "Well, that was the 13th. Hurry up, lady. You're going to die soon. Go home and eat." Seriously. Do you want that aggravation just to save a few pennies at Walmart? I do. But you see, prices will be different simply because of recognition of different opportunity costs of different classes of people. And so we have that to consider. This is not accounting. This is what we do in finance. This is how we think in finance. It's about the full-blown range of costs. Another thing that can happen, too, is accounting recognizes historical costs, which is a really bad way to think about costs in business decision-making. Let me give you a scenario here. Marker there. I want to find my. Ouch! Oh, here. Okay. Now, you decided, sir, that you are going to live your dream and you are going to own your own little tiny gas station. Yes, one of those little kiosk things where you inside you sell cigarettes and snackies, and then people go up and they get their gas, and then they pay at the pump or they pay inside. And you've got this little room in the back. First of all, you wanted to do this, so you got your workers, owner of a little gas station pants, and you've changed your name to Earl, so you can wear a shirt that has a circle that says Earl. And you go into business. And in the back, you've got a little black and white TV that you can sit there and watch things like ridiculous entertainment channels like Fox News. And just live the dream. And so you're sitting there, and there are other competing gas stations along the line. You all have your prices at about the same level. Let's say that you all have your prices at $2.50 a gallon. That was because at the wholesale, the last time this Coqueline truck came through, you bought the gas at $2.25 per gallon, and you mark it up. And all of the other gas stations are right around that same price. That's how competitive markets work. You'll see a price settlement that is fairly tight. It's not collusion. It's just logical competitive behavior. Because you can all sell all the gas you have, at the prevailing market price of $2.50 a gallon. Well, you're sitting there and you're enjoying watching the TV, Fox News, and here comes the driver with the new load of gasoline. And the driver comes up to your pump and gets you buy a load of 10,000 gallons at $2.25 per gallon. Price has been pretty stable. 10,000 gallons at. Okay, so you're all good. and you go back in, you wave to the driver, bye, thank you, see you next week, and you go back in and squat down on your little stool and watch. But the TV is showing something very different now. It wasn't that silly news from before. You're seeing video of explosions and fires and ships burning and fighter jets. And there's a picture of a mushroom cloud at a long distance. And the ticker is reading attack on Iran. Iran responds, mining the Strait of Hormuz. Rumors of nuclear exchange between Israel and Iran. Saudi Arabia has been struck by an unknown weapon that destroyed half of Riyadh. By the time the truck gets to your nearest competitor down the road, the driver has already gotten the message to bring the price up to $10.50 per gallon. So all of the gas stations along the road, suddenly they start marking up their 25 cents, so they're all running at $10.50 because of the higher wholesale price they paid. You caught it just before the price spiked. Now, you got your gas at $2.25 a gallon. What are you going to charge, madam?
Oh.
Yeah, what are you going to post for your price?
Okay.
I wouldn't.
$10.49.
Why would you do 49 when you can sell it all at 50? Who cares? You can all sell it, all your gas. You're going to charge the prevailing price. You're going to just make a really nice profit. Well, I love my customers. I ain't going to screw them like that. They rely on me. No, they don't. You know what will happen if you charge $2.50 a gallon? Everyone will hit your gas station, wipe out your gas, and you won't have any money to buy the next load at $10.50 when the Cocaline driver comes back. In other words, replacement cost is what matters, not historical cost. Those customers, oh wow, they're still charging $2.50 and everyone else is charging $10.50. They'll wipe out your load, you'll be out of business, and they won't even remember that your name was Earl. They will care not one shred about you. That's the reality of business. They'll wipe out your load, and then when you're gone because you can't afford another load because you didn't charge enough, well, they'll just drive down the road to the next station and curse them for having high prices. But they'll buy the gas anyway. You see, that's how we have to think in finance, not about historical cost. We have to care about replacement cost. So what's on those books for the fixed assets? Well, doesn't mean a thing to us. And that's the next thing, depreciation. You take a depreciation expense against capital expenditures in every financial statement, every income statement. Well, you know what? At the beginning of this year, I spent $4,500 on new equipment for my business. That $4,500, I have to divide that up over 5 years and depreciate out that amount of money, and let's say I'm going to do a straight line. That means that $900 a year I get to take off my income statement. Well, you know what depreciation is? It is nothing. There is no such thing as it. I don't write a check for $900 to depreciation. I wrote a check for $4,500. In other words, depreciation is a meaningless thing in finance. We have to add it back in and then take away what we really spent, because what we care about is cash flow. You can have a profit every year until you drill into the ground. My company is profitable every year, but my free cash flow is negative. And so eventually I'll go out of business unless I can turn that around. Sooner or later, you can't live the way you're living. Tesla is a great example. The company is a walking disaster on its automotive side. You have some moron running the company. He's a ham. He gets up there and shows off and says, 200,000 orders for my truck. He smokes pot, until, so you've got a baked ham up there showing off. And if you look at the profit, you look at the free cash flow, the only way he's surviving is because there are suckers out there still pouring money into the company. It can't live on its revenues. That's the same is true with many companies. Well, it was profitable last year. Yeah, but you look at the financials, you look at the free cash flow, they're bleeding year after year after year. There are other cases where you see companies that have negative profit, and yet they're healthy because the free cash flow is positive. They're actually bringing in money. I've run businesses. Most of them I ran into the ground, I'm proud to say. But let me tell you, profit means nothing that night, Thursday night, when you're writing the checks to meet payroll. And you just thank God there's enough left over so you can order a Grand Slam at Denny's after you finish writing the checks. And the Grand Slam, I go with the one that's got the scrambled eggs and the pancakes. They're really good. Seriously, I mean, you know, there are a couple other places, but that Grand Slam, $5.99, and I can get a decent meal. So here's the thing, though. The reality of it is that it doesn't matter what the profit or the loss of the company is. When you're writing that check and you have to make payroll for a bunch of people, if you don't, their kids literally go hungry. That's the reality of finance. We don't give a rat's ass about what the accountants say. Same is true with other fields. Don't get me wrong. Accounting is incredible. It's wonderful. You'll make a lot of money. You'll live a very, very dull life. I shouldn't do this. Accounting is a very important, powerful field. It's much more powerful than finance. However, we are all under siege now. The reality of it is that we'll all be replaced by artificial intelligence systems within the next 20 years. So every time you say, Alexa, lights on, and all that kind of stuff, every time you pop open your little expensive mobile phone, you're basically putting the nails in your own coffin as well as everyone else's. We will become obsolete. That's just the reality of it. But that's down the road. Right now, I'm still teaching. They'll replace me someday with a robot that will remember do better than I can. Okay, you understand? I'm laying out the conceptual thinking that we have in our world, in finance. Now, a couple of things to start with. Just a couple of background layers on this whole thing. But before I go much further, to say that finance is wonderful is a lie. Finance is full of backstabbers, criminals, thieves, sociopaths, just like business in general. The finance, according to some of the most conservative of financial publications, finance is described as the most corrupt of all of the fields. That's just the reality of it. We have a history of lying, cheating, stealing. We have a terrible history of racism and sexism, and I am dedicated to breaking the backs of those sons of bitches and taking down some of the heroes that you have heard about, like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, George Soros, Warren Buffett. Those kinds of people, probably maybe one or two of you are really those kinds of people. The rest of you are actually fairly decent human beings. That's just the reality of it. And I'll cover some of those stories, especially when I get into the ethics lectures in a couple of weeks. You'll hear a lot about that dark, dark world. And I was in that world. And like I said, I almost got killed. I almost ended up in prison. Thank God I just didn't want to be the best friend forever of some big guy. But it's a dark world, and there is a bright world to it because we are the ones who decide on rational mathematical basis whether or not to make investments in projects in a company, in stocks and bonds, in new employees to hire, in factories. We're the ones who say yes or no, based upon the real numbers, after we fix the accounting numbers, the marketing numbers, and all of that. finance as a discipline is a large, wide area. Just briefly to cover it with you, maybe to convert a few of you souls to the dark side. Most people, when they think of finance, they think of investments. Stocks and bonds, buying and selling. That's investment finance. It is actually a rarefied field. You have to be really strong. There aren't a whole lot of jobs, and there will be fewer jobs as artificial intelligence takes over. Many of the jobs will be nothing more than sales jobs. It is a very difficult field to crack into. Even if you get into it, it's almost like a nightmare hazing experience. Did any of you ever see the movie Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith? Yeah, I mean, he was actually in the high end of the league. That guy, that was a true story. And I mean, that was awful, but like I said, most people who get into it don't get in at that high a level. You end up being in some boiler room with a bunch of other people scrambling to survive from day to day and not making quite enough of a quota, so they get rid of you after you've burned yourself out. It's a heavy-duty, very difficult field, and it is highly regulated, but even at that, it's still a field where there is far too much testosterone and far too little recognition of the importance of diversity, which would help get rid of some of the criminality that still exists to this day. Another part of finance is corporate finance, much larger. Many, many, many finance jobs, you're working in a corporation, managing the money that comes in, managing the money that goes out. How do we, if we have bills due in 2 weeks, but we've got money in the bank now, do we pay those bills now? No. We figure out ways that we can get that money to work for us for a little while, okay? That's an important part of this whole thing, is in corporate finance. Or figuring out, okay, what are we going to have to do for salaries? What are we going to have to do for benefits? What is going to be enough that we attract the right kinds of people, but not so much that we're going to break the bank of the corporation? Lots and lots of different things that are, some of it is, I can't even describe it until later in the semester. Okay, that's corporate. Now there's institutional finance. This is working in banks. There are a lot of jobs. I mean, it's indoor work, it's clean, white-collar work, it's not very sexy, it doesn't have any sex appeal, and you can work pretty darn hard. I mean, I know people who just burned out doing loan originations and all that kind of stuff, because some nights you're there a long time, other nights it's not so bad. But institutional finance is just banks, credit unions, things like that. Another area that is huge right now, we even have a financial planning institute here at ISU. It's one of the top 100 in the country. Helping people manage their money so that they can achieve life goals. Working through figuring out, okay, you want to have a new home in 7 years, you want your plan to have 3 kids, you want to have them enough money they can go to college, you want to have a new car every 3 years, laying out all of their goals and figuring out how much it's going to cost them every month, putting into an account that you oversee or your people oversee, so that as these life goals, as these time frames hit, they have the money to achieve what they want. Financial planning is very big. It's mostly sales oriented. Don't let anyone tell you it's all about analysis of stocks and bonds. No, the big money in financial planning is in being the front end, selling packages. And you're not helping poor people. You're not helping working class people. You're helping upper middle class and rich people achieve their dreams. The poor people, well, they can go to hell. You just got to recognize that this is not, you're not helping the world. You're helping people who can afford you. That's financial planning. It's like I said, we have a very, very strong program here. And if you're interested in talking about it, I will introduce you to the director of the program, and they will take you in and get you started. Probably the biggest field where jobs are just plentiful right now is risk management and insurance. There was a hiring surge decades ago in the insurance industry, and then they just sat on it. And all those baby boomers got older and older, and now these big insurance companies are realizing, oh my God, we are going to, the numbers right now, within the next 6 years, they're going to be down probably 500,000 jobs in the insurance industry. And that means they are craving for people. And I'm not talking about insurance like auto insurance for mom and pop and stuff like that. I'm talking about the world of commercial insurance, setting up insurance packages to indemnify complex risks of large corporations or small businesses and all that kind of stuff, and risk management. How do we help these companies mitigate their risks on physical site, and how do we help them mitigate risks in terms of financial instruments that make money when bad times happen for them so that they can cover themselves? That's risk management insurance. We have our RIMS program is called the Cady School within the School of Business and within the Department of Finance. The Cady School is one of the top three in the nation, and the director of the program, a great friend of mine. Our school is recognized around the world. Literally, I've been in Europe, and I have, oh, you're at Illinois State University. That's the Cady School. Do you know Jim Jones? Oh, yeah, he's a good friend of mine. So if you are interested in a place where you can be pretty much assured, and the insurance industry just pours money into Gamma Iota Sigma, the insurance fraternity, scholarships, study abroad, internships, and all that kind of stuff all over the world. If you're interested in that, talk to me. I'll walk you up there. I warn you, though, if I take you into Jim Jones's office and I say, this person wants to be in the insurance program, he'll just, you are ours now, and I'll never see you again. Then there are other parts too. One of my fields long ago was real estate finance. And I am not talking about mom and pop selling their 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath home in the burbs. I'm talking about commercial real estate, skyscrapers, indoor malls, outdoor malls, strip malls, cluster malls, that kind of stuff. Buildings, factories, land for development, apartment complexes. That's real estate finance. The math is actually, this course would give you enough that you would be able to handle any of the math in real estate. It's not really high power deep math. It's very routine. Analyzing whether a property is worth buying or not, and then negotiating a selling price from whoever owns it, figuring out how much it's going to cost. Say you see a strip mall in Kansas, in the outer regions of Kansas City. Okay, they want $1.8 million for it. We work this out. If we can get the occupancy rate up to 90%, which means we're going to have to spend about $500,000 on improvements and all that kind of stuff, and then we can flip it in 5 years for maybe $5-6 million. Yeah, we'll probably go with that. It's just a decision making with the math. It's the numbers. It's not sentimental at all. Now, another one that is beyond belief, it is the largest of all of them, and it's the least well understood in terms of places where you can actually take courses. I've tried to have them allow me to do a course in this. It is the world of entertainment finance. I'm not talking about little streams of money. I'm not even talking about rivers of money. I'm talking about oceans of money, day and night, everywhere. Everything from TV and movies to music to sports. I mean, the big are the media, that would be TV, radio, music, and then on the other side is the sports. And I'm talking about sports of all kinds. You can think of anything, and I can find a venue, and I can find a way to make money off it. In sports, everything from the standards like American football to European football, talk about basketball, baseball, anything that you want to dream of. Hell, even curling has gotten a fan club now with money flowing into it. Anything you can think of where there is excitement, and then there is the sub-discipline of sports. There is the physical sports, and then there's this new world, which is stupid as hell, but who cares, of esports. We've even opened up a program here in esports, and we're giving out scholarships, which just pisses me off. But seriously, I mean, when you have people playing Call of Duty and they're making fortunes while people watch them, and I'm thinking to myself, you son of a bitch, you'd be a bullet sponge in my platoon. You know, we send you out there first. Yeah, go, die for us. Oh, you're screaming, you've been shot, you're screaming to hit the reset button. Sorry, we don't have one. But that's just me being a bitch. Okay. No, seriously, but look, the money is insane in this world. I took my finance club students up to Chicago, to the White Sox, and it's just like, to their finance people, and it's just like, talking about the millions and millions and millions of dollars. I took them to the race facility in Joliet, where we have a couple of our grads running the place, and talk about the finance of a small-time operation on the NASDAQ circuit. They also have the drag racing there. We talked to a drag racer who was a graduate from ISU, talking about how he makes a living doing this, how he profits as a drag racer in that world. Learning why you wear all those stickers all over your body, how much it costs. Every time he hits that, he's 3.5 seconds, he's burned up possibly $250,000 that has to be replaced in that machine for the next run. Talking about him, yes, my life as a drag racer is going to be ended in a couple of years because I don't want to go blind. Because it seems the drag racers, that acceleration right off the starting line, their retinas pull back every time, and sooner or later, if they push it too long, the retina detaches and they fly down there completely in the dark. And talking about when the optimal time to quit is, cost versus reward, and all that kind of stuff. Sports is so fascinating. Entertainment. Media. We don't look in terms of whether or not it's right or wrong to do this. We don't care. All we care about is can we make money off it, and that's whatever it does to the society, whatever it does to kids, that's not our problem unless we have to pretend we care. And all that. So there are some of the things that finance does. So if you're interested, welcome to the dark side. We have cookies. Or you can live your life quietly. Well, actually, some of these are. I mean, I don't want you to get the impression. Investments can be insane. If you're in the world of buying and selling, trading, I mean, that's a wild, crazy field. I've got only a very few students have cut it in this field. A couple right now, star players are getting internships in Chicago and New York. They've just got a special thing about them. They're crazy mofos. Corporate's quiet, very respectable. You get to do business casual most days. Institutional, business casual to business formal. Again, very respectable, quiet. You go home at the end of every day and you don't want to kill yourself. Financial planning, you feel good about what you've done for rich people and wealthy families. This one can be very interesting. In some areas, you sit in a cubicle all the time, but in other areas, you might one day be working in your cubicle on an Excel spreadsheet. The next day, you're walking along a barge going down the Mississippi River, and the next day, you would be climbing on a scaffolding of a building under construction to look for risk exposures. That's interesting, too. Real estate, depends on what kind of real estate. It's a rush when you actually sell a commercial property. And then entertainment, that's its own world. So that gives you kind of a layout of what finance means and saying, I'm in finance, or if you're from Decatur, I'm in finance. I disrespect Decatur. I apologize in advance. I'll make fun of Decatur several times in the course. So if you're from Decatur, don't get mad at me. I'm from Decatur. My mom's from Decatur. Yeah, I know, son. I saw her in the truck stop. I didn't say that. I so have to edit these podcasts. There's where we start. Now, as far as business goes, regardless of how you define it, every one of you has been in business, or as we used to say in Texas, business. Yes, we put the D in business. Okay? You've all done business. In fact, there is a type of organization, an organizational form, that is by far, in numbers, vastly outnumbers all other types of businesses in terms of its organizational structure. It's entirely simple. It is what we call a sole proprietorship. This is just one person acting on his own. You, madam, decided that you wanted to mow lawns. And so you bought yourself a lawnmower, some pruning shears for nice things like that, and you just go to people's houses and say, I'd like to mow your lawn. You come to my house. I should like to mow your lawn. And I'd say, well, okay, how much do you charge? And you say, okay, $50. And you mow my lawn. And you come back, I'd like my $50, so I'll give you your $50. That's a sole proprietorship. It's one person, just one person doing something. Walking a dog, watching a house, babysitting, selling meth, being the dealer who helps people have their Addy in the dorms. It's entrepreneur. Don't judge me, okay? Don't. No. Okay? There is no Breaking Bad. There's breaking meh. But there's a problem with that. You come to my house and you're mowing my lawn and you don't see my expensive $10,000 poodle and you mow it. And you give that animal a show dog trim. Well, I sue you. Well, your lawnmower was $249 at Menards. Now you've got your truck, and that's $500 on a good day when the tires are filled with air. And then when that's not enough, you say, well, that's all my business stuff. So what? I'm just going to go through your place. I'm going to go through your house, your trailer on the outskirts of Toledo. And I'm going to take your house trailer, the couch in there. I'm going to take your Velvet Elvis paintings. I'm going to take your plaster things that you bought at the flea market. I'm going to take everything you own. And if that's not enough, I'm going to take your hair. I will shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your parents wear furry costumes that please me. Mrs. Fox, I recommend it, the starter kit. And Mr. Bear. Okay. Anyway, where was I? Focus, okay? You are all at risk. All at risk. You get to keep your money and you get to pay all your bills out of your own backside. There is no protection of you personally because you are the company. Now, you can get a DBA. There's a way you can get a fictitious name. You could call yourself Lawns R Us or something like that. But it's still you. I've had sole proprietorships many times. As a matter of fact, my corporation now, Emergent Light Studio, began as just a plain sole proprietorship. And at the time, it was called Digital Imagery by Alan Crane. And I simply applied for a protection of that fictitious name. But it was still me that ran it. It was my bank account. If anything went wrong when I was at those shows, and like, for example, there was a show where you put up all these displays and you got these easels with my expensive artwork on it. Some moron kid came through and kicked the stand, and the picture went over, shattered the glass, and they were screaming at me that I might have cut their precious little snot. And so if they had decided to sue me, I mean, there's nothing I could have done. You know, I was really, the woman was just yelling at me, and I had to maintain my professionalism. You know, I said, look, bitch. But the next one is a partnership. This is all at risk. The people are jointly and severally liable. So if I am partners with you, madam, and you decide to become a criminal animal or a criminal animal, I am responsible for what you've done wrong. That's why you have to watch yourself. You have to be careful in forming a partnership, because you're all at risk jointly and severally. If you don't have any money, but you're the one who screwed up, they'll come to me and I have to pay it. You have to leave early. But then the final one is the corporation. God, that pisses me off. This is the real one. Because in a corporation, the corporation is a separate legal entity from you. As the owner, you are not responsible for the corporation's liabilities. They are separate from you. And that means that if the corporation does something wrong, you are not going to be hit personally. You understand that that frees us, that lets us go so that we can make decisions without constantly being afraid of risk. It is also the great curse, because a corporation can be used to destroy investors. I won't mention a certain person's name, but his entire life has been creating investments, paying himself massive salaries, and then getting investors to put more money in and more money in, and then the corporation collapses into bankruptcy, and he just walks on to the next deal. And then he becomes so famous that the idiots in the entertainment industry make him an icon of the genius business person. Imagine that can be part of this corporate trick. And it is. And I won't mention any names of people who have done that. But you can become so famous being a complete screw-up that you could become, you know, like a politician, a leader. One could say that you could trump all of your others. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.